moving.
Well, we'll call the committee to order, and we have a quorum. We'll take up the governor's bill, and the majority ought to be able to handle it. We've got 3-1. It's 329.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Gary Jenkins, Director of Audit and Department of Revenue. And the bill before you is fairly straightforward in that it is providing for a residential fuel credit for homeowners or renters in the state of Alaska. In accordance with the provisions of the bill, it would be a 2% credit of all expenses for heating oil, gas, electricity, or any other fuel used on a taxpayer's personal residence. The main reason that oil and gas and electricity was all put together is that it's obviously there are all different varying mixes of how a person heats their house in the state and so forth, and so it was just easier to combine the various utilities together. As you can see by my memorandum, we anticipate that this costs approximately $2,500,000 a year. Glad to answer questions if there are any.
Mr. Jenkins, is there a quid pro quo bill floating around?
A ring idiot, isn't it? So next, I mean, as a verbal, I don't know, I just remember yourself.
In other words, if they want to raise to a half, one hand while this is getting credit on the other.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe that this was part of the governor's total oil and gas tax package, and of course, hearings have been going on in the oil and gas bills that will raise somewhat in excess of $2.5 million that anticipated. These were, he put these in together as a package. This one was every tax bill, the income tax bill. It seems like it was one of them that came in a package of four bills, and this was the fourth bill. Share a little bit of that revenue back to people who are obviously in there.
That's the bell that's sniffing. She's a guy who's out with it. Throw it.
Any questions from the
audience?
What was the rationale for 2%?
Frankly, Mr. Chairman, I can't answer that. I believe it was chosen in our commissioner's office, I think in conjunction with the governor's office, and I really do not know. This bill, a similar bill was in last year, and I believe the same percentage was used then, and I just presume that they think that was a reasonable figure to use, but I do not know the exact justification for it.
Well, I guess if we were going to increase it or decrease the percentile, well, we'd have to do some research. I wonder, is anybody interested in checking into that? I just bring it up as, you know, an academic type consideration.
About $2 million just in the
Okay, you'll sort of do that as a committee of one. I mean, it'd be sort of nice that the House, in its wisdom, 2% is fine, but 5% is better. Check in. Any further questions? Thank you, Gary.
Yes, sir.
Anybody else want to speak on it? Okay.
Small percentage, I doubt the people are going to go out, you know, pay that many extra to get that 2% back.
Not on victimless crime.
I don't know where.
think he turned a lot.
No, he won't.
I know how long it cost them to.
Sure, you get the fact that you.
But at any rate, I find myself agreeing with Representative Miller on many things. That's the one I don't, where you start to get the scales, and this will last, and if he lives here, gets more than somebody else who lives somewhere else. Gosh, this is the first bill that's come along, seems like to me, that the governor wants to get the taxpayer a raise. And I think that this is the best thing that's seen come along. Not every one of them wants to regulate him or raise his fees or something. This is a good deal. And both for the Bush and the guy down there. It's great. I wish we could spend more than 2 cents.
I think we could money can be found, so. But maybe why don't we have it, and were you here when Bill said he'd look into the advisability of, you know, at least the rationale for decreasing the percentile or increasing it? From reducing it from 2% or raising it like maybe to 4% or something. We didn't know what the rationale was, but so you just point us to 21% shows. Yeah, gas, electricity, fuel, oil, on and on and on. And it defines residential fuel tax as the guy's personal place. And now, individuals sometimes, in a lot of cases, a corporation. This is excluded that. Would you be interested in huddling with Miles and do it? We'll try to expedite this when you bring us back the information why we should raise it to 4% so we can look better than the governor. So, okay. We might want to put a rider on here and make it.
They can't take the barrel back. They use it.
They use it.
Yeah, when they come in the next time, on the road, they exchange it.
Now, knowing that, maybe we should give them the bottle. I didn't know they had barges.
Bottles at all 55-gallon drums.
Well, I don't know about what section 43 is in the statute, but it might lend itself to an amendment, including the center of them charging. That's a concept. I don't know. Okay, we'll take up House Bill 369. We have this before us once before. Oh, that's right. This is a famous introduced by State Affairs Committee. Representative Miller?
Still hold true with the destination. They'd have to pay not only the employee would play his own cost of position, the employer cost.
Yeah, just what we're from the administration.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Paul Arnold. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Retirement. And the bill as for us, House Bill 369, is rather clear in that it'll allow participation by public employee organizations. And the one that comes to mind for me is APEA. And there are two areas that may or will present some serious problems. One is the basic solvency of that entity that may be joining under this provision. For example, if they were to lose their membership because another union should take away part of their membership, the question first immediately comes to mind, who will pay for the unfunded liability? For example, let's say APA joins and they buy in their past service for their employees, and that means that they're going to assume a past service liability or an unfunded liability for those employees, which will be funded over time. And if that entity then should cease, that liability has not been met. So the question then becomes, who would pay for it? And I think we've just, in the last year or so, looked at the solvency of APA, and now we're looking with the other unions that are pressing hard to try to take membership away, and that does happen. So there is a question, or a very serious question, as to what would happen in that case. The projected rates to cover this unfunded liability are just that, they're projections, but in reality, the actual benefit that is paid has got to be assumed by the entity from which those employees come from. And if that entity doesn't exist, or the membership to support that entity has seriously dropped, the funding base may not be there to support it. And then also, I want to point out that constitutionally, these benefits for those employees are guaranteed to be paid. And if the entity that has lost its membership is dissolved, then the other employers of the fund, being both the political subdivisions and the state, would be stuck with that liability. The other area that is a serious problem as we see it is the ERISA Act, which is the Employee Retirement Insurance or Income Security Act, which was passed in September 1st of 1974. This act covers all private and nonprofit organizations, and as such, this union or this organization or APEA would be considered a nonprofit organization. They would be covered under the ERISA Act. Now, the reason I'm pointing this out is that all public funds are not subject to ERISA legislation. But once you allow an entity into a system, then you're opening yourself for federal intervention under this ERISA Act. The responsibilities or the guidelines that are set out under the ERISA are very stringent. Places your responsibility on the trustees, increases the amount of disclosure to all your members. Guarantees that an employee has a right to a benefit based on the employer contribution, even though that employee has terminated and been refunded. And if there are other considerations which tend to become rather expensive. There are, in conjunction with this, there is a consideration for an act called TRISA, which would be for the public funds and nationwide state funds are looking at this and are trying to determine what that new act might provide, but they do see what the ERISA Act will require. The organization here would have all the command you are making itself subject to that act. Therefore, we must oppose this bill. In the system being PERS, they're not under the teacher's retirement system. There are two entities, the NEA and the Alaska Municipal League. Both of those entities, as we see it now, based on the ERISA, is coming out and presenting serious problems to us. That's what I'm saying. Both of those are going to have because there is, like I said, there is. If you were to look at the ERISA Act, it's very involved. And I don't know whether the posture that we want to be involved with the type of federal intervention that will be there.
sahab tum shul sir na sahab shdir kana da patna shna na ke chaka ra hi ye si ra ni na as ke hop se sin ya pola sa wa de ni bi un ka un de sa sa vesna ba bi na ye na ma ma me un na na ra shi chuma
I respect your manners. Me and you should be nice. Chris, dear. What? What's my kid's dear part? Hey, would you?
They get the cream, but they don't take the crop. Anybody who represents the state employees must be a state employee and come under all the other days, the bad parts and the good parts. That would be something else. And I'm sure they don't need it. They have a
Thank you, Mr. Byrne.
Mr. Chairman, Roy Dunn, APEA. We would like to certainly endorse this bill because it is advantageous to not only the state employees and the people that represent them, but also to the state administration and to them. As Mr. Miller indicated, it does provide for better articulation and better communication by the means of when it comes time to replace an APEA staff member, the first place that we would like to look would be to state employees, simply because the state employees are involved in within the state employment. They realize the rationale and the reasonings behind the different elements of the employment, and they basically are an expert. Are essentially basically thereof. So it would be much wiser, as Mr. Miller indicated, to bring a person in from within the state employment to or state employment to represent his fellow workers, rather than bringing somebody in from Nebraska or whoever. Now this also lends itself to developing, as I indicated earlier, better articulation and better communication, which hopefully will close the gap between the two. It certainly, as was indicated, will not cost the PERS system monies because the employer and the employees pay into the system. I'm not sure what the mean age is of a with a PEA, but I would hesitate to say that it's probably around 40, the age of 40. Now, I'm not sure how much factor is going to give to this, but there's nobody ready for it, so it wouldn't certainly cost the PERS system to be in the first 2 years or whatever. As far as the two elements that Mr. Arnold brought up, I'm unfamiliar with those. And I certainly will check into them and would be willing to The teachers of the PERS, which is a division of the PERS, and we feel that we certainly could benefit, as well as the PERS could benefit, because we have no fiscal commitment to this bill.
So as not to cut off, did anybody want to, what was the feeling on the bill? Does that bother your sense, or were you making your motion based on this bill, or based on the time?
Who said that they're going to go back and check the information?
Is that okay? All right. Okay, so it's keep harmony.
I thought Miles would be